This case will be taken under advisement. You were court-appointed, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, we appreciate your taking this case and your fine advocacy for your client. We'll move to the second case. Zobambi versus Gonzalez. Mr. Lehman.
Good morning. And may it please the court, I'd like to begin by quoting from the Board of Immigration Appeals opinion in this case. Second paragraph. The respondent's contention that her father was head of an opposition party is essential to her request for relief. It is also a contention that should be subject to easy corroboration. Typically, evidence of a person's positions as head of a national political party is reasonably accessible. Thus, we believe it was reasonable for the immigration judge to expect that the respondent corroborate her claim. Only problem with that, Your Honors, is that that was not her claim. Her claim was not that her father was the head of this opposition political party. And I did not try this case. I only have handled the appeal, but the thing that struck me was there has been a fundamental misapprehension of the facts of her claim that calls into question the reliability of the fact-finding that was done and the review that was accorded by the Board of Immigration Appeals, because very evidently the Board of Immigration Appeals feels that the case turned on a contention that her father was head of an opposition political party. May it please the court, the immigration judge, in fact, referenced at one point during the trial the Home Office report on the Republic of Congo, and there was a discussion of a certain page in that report wherein the presidents of the various political parties, as of the time of the trial, are identified by name, and that is at in the administrative record at page 159. The RDD and the PCR parties are identified, and as are their presidents. And my client's father's name is very evidently neither shown as the head of neither party. So there's a fundamental problem in this case that both the immigration judge and the Board of Immigration Appeals completely misapprehended the asylum applicants, or they attributed to her claim that she was not presenting, and then denied her because she had failed to corroborate it.
Well, what, in fact, was he? What was he? Was he a member?
Been,
was he a leader of a smaller group?
He was a member. He and two relatives, an uncle and I believe a brother, were both members, but it was not claimed in either in her testimony or in her asylum application, which of course is a fundamental document, and her affidavit is at page 255, starts at page 255 of the administrative record. In her affidavit, which was incorporated in the asylum application, she indicated that he had been a member of the administration of a prior administration, but nowhere was she claiming that he was the head or the president, I'm sorry, of the RDD. There's also an error in my view of the testimony in the immigration judge's handling of the issue of a failure to file within 1 year. She testified, and it's at page 115 of the administrative record. She learned, I believe it was sometime in, it was after her entry, She was contacted by a brother who had fled to France and had been granted asylum in France. The brother told her of the imprisonment, the arrest, the death of her uncle, and the imprisonment of her father. She testified that she then retained an attorney in Fort Wayne, Indiana, but that attorney had neglected the case. She further testified that in December 2002, she retained, in November or December 2002, she retained Miss Margaret Falls, who was the trial attorney in this matter, who was represented her at the trial. That's an important factor in the assessment of whether a reasonable or a good faith effort has been made to comply with the one-year requirement. In this case, it's important to note that she really didn't learn of the what had happened to her uncle and the imprisonment of her father until, I believe the record shows, sometime in... certainly after her entry in 2001 or 2002. Now, that's not a change in circumstance, but that objectively, but subjectively it is, because that's when she first had knowledge of those circumstances, and that...
So what did the IJ say about that?
I'm sorry?
What did the immigration judge say about
talk about the late discovery of the the death of her uncle and imprisonment of the father, nor did he discuss her testimony that she had retained another attorney who had neglected the matter. And that it just didn't factor in. And... as a matter of fact, the trial was exactly 2 years ago today. And what I note, what struck me when I reviewed the transcript for the first time, the judge said, I've had another matter this morning that's gone much longer than anticipated, so I'd appreciate it if we could just speed this matter along. And the trial started, or the hearing started, 1 hour late. So
Well, why the late filing? And obviously, you know, we don't. This is just for the asylum issue, right?
Yes, Judge.
And you know, we don't have jurisdiction to do anything with that unless there's something really extraordinary.
Well, I think the court should offer guidance. I think the courts of appeal should offer guidance on what circumstances or a constellation of circumstances which may appropriately be held to toll the 1 year, or to excuse a non-compliance with the 1 year rule.
Well, you mean like ineffective assistance of counsel?
I'm sorry.
Like ineffective assistance?
Yes, that was certainly one of them.
But that's what you can argue to the IJ or to the BIA.
They apparently have paid no attention to it.
Well, but the law is pretty clear that we have no jurisdiction to review that. Only the Attorney General can make that determination.
Well, I think as an issue of law that I think the Court of Appeals could offer guidance as to the circumstances that should be considered when a late asylum application is filed, and I think in this case they were present. She's living in a small town. She is not an Anglophone. She's a Frank. She enters speaking no English. There are. I grew up in a small town in central Illinois, so and it's nothing against the smaller town attorneys, but I don't think down in where I'm from in central Illinois, there are many attorneys who are knowledgeable about the immigration laws. That was one circumstance that she testified to. And,
you know, there's a lot of us are from small towns and don't know anything about immigration. But
a lot of people in big towns don't know anything.
Well, Yes, but I
no. Look, the situation here is that she filed late.
Yes.
And the IJ heard all whatever you say didn't hear enough. There should have been more, and we should give guidance and all that. But that said, she does also have at least a better ability to argue about withholding of removal, I guess.
Yes, I think the problem in the case is the BIA views it as completely or as principally turning on a proposition of fact and a contention of fact that she was not making. The asylum application and itself shows that was she didn't claim that he was the president of the party. That was not her testimony. And the immigration judge had a Home Office, a British Home Office report on the country that showed quite clearly who was the president. So how could he have felt that she was making that claim and failed to make it? So we submit that the petition should be granted, Your Honors.
All right, thanks. Mr. Steele.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Daniel G. Steele. I'm from the Department of Justice, and I represent Attorney General Gonzalez in this matter. May it please the Court. In this case, a petitioner has had an opportunity to have a full and fair hearing at the agency level, at the IJ level, and at the BIA level. And at these levels, she had the full right to present her case and the equities in the case and the legal matters concerning the case. At no point in the process did she develop significant evidence that she would be harmed because of any political affiliation upon her return to the Congo, or even that she was a member of any political party or subject to prosecution or persecution back there. The fact of the matter is she has never been harmed back at the Congo, and she doesn't have a political affiliation back at the Congo. So, Your Honor, you have no harm and you have no political affiliation in this case. The transcript in the administrative record indicates that she had a full and fair hearing. The petitioner asserts here that the hearing was rushed. A reading of the administrative record and the transcript of the BIA proceedings indicates that she was given up to 3 hours to present her case. She, the petitioner, in the case below, said she only needed an hour and a half to present the case, and that her brother was going to come in and corroborate her testimony. As it turns out, the brother never came, even though he lived 2 hours away in South Bend, never came. But the bottom line fact is that she had all the opportunity, all the due process to present a full case. She failed, however, to present the evidence that there was a nexus, a link between persecution going on in the Congo and by the way, the country reports, which were all before the IJ, reflect that country is in turmoil. There is no question about that. But the burden, by clear, convincing, and persuasive evidence, is on the petitioner to show that if she goes back to the Congo, she will be subject to persecution back there. The petitioner did not prove that case. And the law indicates that it is up to the petitioner to make that case, to prove by her testimony, by documentary evidence, and by cooperation.
Well, cooperation, ordinarily when there's an adverse credibility determination, then you need some corroboration. But here, there is no adverse credibility determination. The IJ never said, I didn't believe anything that she said. And ordinarily, that's what's looked for in these cases. If you say, I don't believe your testimony, then you have to come up with something else to substantiate that it's true, some additional evidence. But here, doesn't look like the IJ disbelieved anything she said.
Well, the IJ in the transcript indicates that he did have problems, that he didn't think she was persuading him, meeting her burden of proof in this case to show that she would be subject to persecution back at the Congo. And I my reading of the transcript, Your Honor, is that he was looking forward to having cooperation through her brother, Stephen, and he never came.
The brother in France is the one that had asylum, correct?
She has a brother in France, too,
yeah.
Of Angol.
But there was nothing from him, affidavit or otherwise. Obviously, he got asylum for some reason.
There was no evidence from him at all, either, in any form. It seems, and I think the IJ was looking for some type of evidence that would bolster the concept that, you know, having suffered no harm herself, in a lot of these cases, these people have been subject to persecution back in their homeland. Here, I think he was looking for some type of evidence that would indicate that if she went back, she would be, and that evidence simply was not developed in the record. There's discussion about confusion in the record. This is at the record at page 20 of the administrative. Actually, it's the transcript, the BIA transcript at page 20, and this is the page that the petitioner's attorney is referring to. And it's true, that record is muddled. However, it is up to the petitioner again to prove by persuasive evidence that exactly what her father's position was with the RDD back there. And that certainly could have been clarified through her attorney or through the petitioner's testimony. At bottom, Your Honors, and I say this with all due respect, it doesn't really matter what the title was of petitioner's father back in the Congo with that political affiliation, because in the end, whatever it was, and by the way, from my reading of the record, there's like 100 political parties back at the Congo from one time to another, and it was up to, the burden was on the petitioner to show that it was her father, because of his affiliation with a party. It doesn't necessarily mean he has to be president of that organization or the head of the organization, but she needs to show that is that nexus, that connection that would demonstrate by clear and convincing evidence that she herself would be persecuted, especially since she's sort of piggybacking the allegation on him.
She doesn't know where he is at this point, right?
That's what the record indicates, Your Honor, yes, since 1999, I believe. They've lost track. And the IJ was a little confused about that because, again, there was no evidence being produced that showed that he was killed or imprisoned or, in his words, in the IJ's words, whether he just lost contact with the family. I would like to turn next, Your Honor, to the issue of the waiver of the one-year waiver when a person applies for asylum in this country. And the fact is, as Your Honors have indicated, that is statutory. The Attorney General has determined, and I think maybe to some extent Congress has also determined, that the circuit courts do not have jurisdiction of that issue. And I would refer to a case... the Vassal case, that's referenced in the government's brief at page 10, in which that case clearly states expressly that the law evinces Congress's intent to preclude judicial review of that type of a claim, that the court does not have jurisdiction to review BIA's timeliness. In closing, Your Honors, the record does not compel a reversal of the immigration judge's decision denying persecution-related relief or petitioner's request for withholding of removal. Further, as I just mentioned, as a jurisdictional matter, petitioner's asylum application and her claim for extraordinary circumstances are not the issues that are properly before this court. Thank you, Your Honors.
Okay, thanks. Your time expired. I do you have anything to add? Make it quick. I just want to make sure that we're covered here because it seems like there's
counsel,
not a whole lot.
stated something about the time that was requested. At page 170 of the administrative record, Margaret Falls wrote the judge, and in the letter, which is in the record, stated that she needed approximately 2 hours to present the case. And I think
instead of an hour and a half.
Instead of an hour and a half.
And then her brother doesn't show up.
That's true, but the judge was interested in speeding matters along. I know your honors were trial lawyers we all were when we were younger. This is like inconsistent verdicts, a jury returning inconsistent verdicts.
We never have any trouble with inconsistent verdicts.
Pardon?
There's never any real problem with inconsistent verdicts.
Yeah.
Well, I've had some in the past, but I go back to the BIA basing its opinion on a contention of fact that this woman was not even making.
But that's pretty remote. There are lots of parties there, whether it's the head of it, the leader, or something, or whether it's not so germane. Plus the fact we're getting to be a long time ago, and not only that, we don't know where the father is. And unfortunately, we don't have the testimony of either brother.
Yes.
So there's some gaps here that could have easily been filled. Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks to both counsel. This case will be taken under advisement.